Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Smyrna,
104.5 FM.
Franklin,
104.5 FM.
Murfreesboro,
104.5 FM.
No matter where you listen in Middle Tennessee, you'll always find us on one frequency.
104.5 The Zone.
Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley both out in Cleveland. Al Saunders is the interim coach there. He's been around the league quite a while. Former head coach out west for like two seasons. Assistant at several different stops. More on that coming up with John Feinstein, who joins us each and every Monday as we hit the big national headlines. We say hello to him now. John, how are you?
I'm well, Jonathan. How are you guys?
Excellent. Excellent. Good to have you on again.
It's good. Well, it's good to have you on again.
Yes, well, thank you.
I was here last week. You and Paul weren't.
That is true.
Paul
yes.
was out scouting MLS players in Paris for the new Nashville franchise. And Jonathan, you're a newlywed, so I think I know what you were doing.
Thank you.
So,
there you go.
So, John, I want to start with something that Paul would actually ask you if he were here right now, but he's over at the Titans press conference.
Of course, yes.
Always dodging you.
Is he drawing up some 2-point conversion plays while he's there? I hope.
I think so. Yeah, I think he's going to present all of those to Mike Vrabel today. But I want to ask you about the Red Sox winning the World Series and something Paul raised earlier. Of course, Paul is a huge Yankees fan.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that the storyline with the Yankees winning a series has always been, well, they went out and bought a World Series. Look at the Yankees; they can go out and buy a World Series. The Red Sox essentially bought a World Series when you look at their payroll compared to everyone else. But it does feel like we cut the Red Sox a break with that storyline and that narrative as opposed to the Yankees. Is that a fair criticism that maybe we should also talk about how much the Red Sox are spending opposed to every other team in baseball?
Well, yes and no. This is their fourth World Championship in 15 years. I don't think they had the highest payroll in baseball the other three times that they won. I think the Yankees did. You can point that out to Paul. I might be wrong. And let me say this. Yes, the Red Sox have the highest payroll. But it's worth knowing, who is the MVP of the World Series?
A guy they got for $50,000 from Toronto.
Exactly. And look at their top three starting pitchers. They traded for all three of them. They didn't just sign them as free agents. Now, J.D. Martinez was a free agent signing. They spent a lot of money to get him. And they do have a lot of money. But I think you have to look at the job Dave Dombrowski has done. Remember, when he arrived from Detroit in August of 2015, the Red Sox were about to have their second straight disastrous season. Since then, they won the division 3 years in a row. They won 108 this year. They won the World Series, obviously. They went 11-3 in postseason. They beat three very good teams. I mean, they beat a 100-win Yankee team, 3-1. They beat a 103 defending champions Astros team, 4-1 after losing game one. And they beat the Dodgers, who only won 92, but got off to a terrible start and had really good starting pitching, or so it would have appeared going into the series. So, you could say they have the highest payroll in baseball, and if you want to be sour grapes and point that out, and I'm no Red Sox fan, you know that. I'm a Mets fan, so I'm used to suffering. But I think you got to give credit where credit's due. Dave Dombrowski did a great job putting this team together. He hired the right manager in Alex Cora. And as I said, a lot of their acquisitions, a lot of their important players were not brought over in free agency. In fact, the only one I can think of off the top of my head is Martinez.
John Feinstein with us. John, David Price, from 0-9 in the postseason to 3 straight wins, including mm-hmm. the ALCS and the World Series clinchers. Can you describe how he has changed the first sentence of his bio moving forward now?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Jonathan, because really, in spite of all the success he'd had as a regular season pitcher, that had to be in the first sentence, that 0-9 record and whatever that sky-high ERA is. I think he turned it around with that game he pitched against the Astros. That's where, because remember, game two against the Yankees, he was terrible. He was out. He didn't survive the second inning, and he's always had trouble with the Yankees. But certainly the way he pitched in the World Series and the way he pitched in particular last night turns him into a guy who's been a very good pitcher and who is now World Series champion, who has finally proven he can pitch in postseason. And by the way, I got to bring this up sitting here in Washington. 2 years ago, the Washington Nationals could have had Chris Sale from the White Sox. But Mike Rizzo, who everybody in Washington will tell you invented baseball, didn't want to give up Trey Turner. Now, Trey Turner's a fine player. He really is a very good player. But to not give up that guy to get a pitcher like Chris Sale when you're trying to win a championship, which presumably is what Washington was doing, again, that's an example of Dave Dombrowski being willing to give up something to get Sale, and look at how it paid off.
You have any issue with Price not being the MVP?
I don't necessarily have an issue with it. I mean, I would have been fine if he had been. I like the idea. Just you guys know me well enough to know I'm always for the underdog, and
yep.
I like the idea of a guy like Pierce who's bounced around and had a middling career getting it. This will be in the first sentence of his biography.
Sure, yes.
You know, whenever he retires, whatever. Steve Pierce, the MVP of the 2018 World Series. So I think it's kind of cool that he won it. He hit the home run that put him in front in the final game. So I'm absolutely fine with it. Although if Price had won, I certainly wouldn't have given you a big argument.
So we had fun over in London, John, but not quite as much fun as the Jacksonville Jaguars had in London. We did not run up a $50,000 tab. I love reading the British tabloids. There's account of it on Twitter, referring to them as the lads
that were trying to
leave the tab that was there. Boy, what a mess Jacksonville has become this season.
Yeah, it's really amazing how they were on the verge of being in the Super Bowl last year, with that lead in the fourth quarter against the Patriots, and had beaten the Steelers in Pittsburgh, were one of the great turnaround teams, and Blake Bortles had finally answered all the questions, it seemed, and they got off to a really good start this year. They hammered the Patriots, I think it was week two, in Jacksonville, and looked like they were going to, you know, ride on to the playoffs again and be a serious Super Bowl contender, and now they completely collapsed in every possible way, as you point out, Chad, with the way they behaved in London. And yeah, it's all the way the Jaguars behaved would be described in the London tabloids as being bad lads on the park, because it doesn't matter whether you're playing or not, you're being bad lads, and that's usually the way English Premier Soccer League players who get into trouble are referred to.
50,000 pounds. A lot of pounds.
That's a lot of drinks.
Those guys have a lot of pounds, but I'm glad that you guys stuck to the underground and stayed out of trouble.
it's a lot of vodka sodas. $50,000 worth.
Yes.
More than I could handle, that's for sure.
So, John, I'm going to go outside the box here. Everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay in the NFL. If you are the Cleveland Browns, why don't you call another young hotshot offensive mind in Lincoln Riley, currently the head coach at Oklahoma, who coached Baker Mayfield?
Not a bad thought. Or you could bring Bob Stoops out of retirement, who also coached Baker Mayfield.
That's true.
And I agree with you that thinking outside the box, which is something that is rarely done in the NFL, is always a good idea, especially for a franchise like the Browns, who have existed in their current form for 20 years now and made the playoffs in 2002, and that's it. And I think that's good. Lincoln Riley's a good thought. There are a lot of good offensive minds out there. The question is getting the right one. I mean, McVay has certainly proven to be the right one with the Rams. We still don't know about Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, because you can't judge him based on Jimmy Garoppolo's 5-0 record last year, and you can't judge him on his record without Jimmy Garoppolo. You have to judge him over a longer period of time when he's got his Jared Goff in the lineup, which we know won't be until next year. One of the interesting things I thought about today when I heard about Hugh Jackson getting fired, it's becoming pretty clear that one thing you don't want to do as an NFL coach is be involved in Hard Knocks. Because look at the recent past. 2014, Mike Smith in Atlanta, fired at the end of the season. Now O'Brien survived in 2015 with the Texans. 2016, Jeff Fisher, 21 years in the NFL, didn't make it through the season. 2017, Dirk Cutter, they'd gone 9-7. The year before, they went 5-11. He almost got fired, and now Hugh Jackson. If I'm an NFL coach and they come to me and say, we want you to do Hard Knocks next year, I run for the door.
Well, and John, he never should have been back. 3-36-1, it was his record there with the Browns, which is insanely bad.
Well, the thing that bothered me at the end of last year is that he basically was saying, this isn't my fault.
Right.
See,
yes.
The coaches that I respect the most are the ones who always say it's their fault, whether it is or not. And he's like, well, it's not my fault. Well, yeah, it is. At least to some degree, it's your fault. And the other thing on Todd Haley, I don't know how much you guys watched of Hard Knocks. I always watch it because, you know, you'll find an interesting storyline or two. I watched it last year because Ryan Fitzpatrick was on the Bucks and he was one of my quarterbacks in my quarterback book, which is coming out in 2 weeks, by the way. But I did watch it this year and I was thoroughly unimpressed with Todd Haley. I don't know about you guys, but he just came across to me as a guy whose basic way of coaching was to scream profanities. And so I'm not surprised he's gone. I think he probably deserved to be gone. He did have some success for a year, I guess, with the Chiefs as a head coach, but I was thoroughly unimpressed with him. And I like your idea, Chad, of going outside the box. I mean, it doesn't have to be Lincoln Riley. That's not a bad suggestion, but why the heck not?
John,
what do you got to lose at this point?
What's interesting about Hard Knocks is the ability to read body language at times in meetings, especially this past one. And you mentioned Todd Haley and how you're not surprised he's out.
Right.
I felt like he kept his mouth shut in certain instances to not cause a scene, and maybe not a scene, but not get into an argument with Hugh Jackson. For instance, when they're at the table and Hugh Jackson says, until you've been in this seat, you just don't know the decisions that have to be made on guys that are hurt and injured and won't play. And I'm thinking to myself, he's got Greg Williams and Todd Haley to his left, who have certainly been in that same seat at some point.
Yeah.
And Haley just kind of sits there, and you could tell he's frustrated.
Well,
and I felt like all season that has been boiling up to the point where he was going to be the interim at some point, and it turns out they're both out.
Right, and they didn't, and they went with somebody completely different, Al Saunders, as the interim.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go with either coordinator. One got fired, one's still there. But that gets back to what I was saying earlier about Hugh Jackson. Stop telling me how hard your job is. You know, don't tell me how hard your job is. You have one of 32 jobs that people would kill to have, and you're making you're being paid a lot of money to do it. So don't tell me how hard your job is. Do your job better. And I don't know Hugh Jackson. I don't like or dislike him, but I was thoroughly unimpressed with both he and Todd Haley, watching Hard Knocks this summer.
You know, and I'm completely with you, and most of this all falls on Hugh Jackson, and I agree with you on all that. I guess my question would also be the Jimmy Haslam part of this, in terms of ownership. What are the realistic chances that someone will come in and succeed in Cleveland, given a spotty history with ownership with that team and Jimmy Haslam's decision-making?
I think that the right coach, whether he's picked because somebody makes a smart decision or picked by accident, can overcome bad ownership. There's no worse ownership in sports than Dan Snyder in Washington. And I think when he hired Jay Gruden 5 years ago, I think he probably thought he was hiring John Gruden. He got confused. But I think Jay Gruden's a pretty good coach. And I'm not saying that just because they're 5-2, because they're 5-2 against a terrible schedule. And they're in what has become a bad division this year. And the Giants are just beyond pathetic. But I think Gruden's been a solid coach. I think putting Doug Williams in place, which they did more as a PR move than anything, has worked out extraordinarily well, getting Bruce Allen not involved at all with personnel. It was Doug Williams who went out and signed Adrian Peterson after the kid Geis got hurt in preseason. And it was Doug Williams who said they should sign Alex Smith. Now, there are still people here in Washington whining that they should have found a way to bring Kirk Cousins back. Kirk Cousins wasn't coming back, no matter what. Alex Smith was the best they could get. And his numbers aren't great, but they're 5-2. So to answer your question, Chad, I think if they get the right coach in place and if they draft well, and I think they made the right decision picking Baker Mayfield. I know he's been up and down a little bit the last few weeks, but I think he was a good choice as the number one pick. And if they get, have a couple more good drafts and they get the right coach, which is a big if, we know that. They've whiffed on quarterbacks more times than Reggie Jackson did in his major league career. they can have success. I really believe that.
John, we'll get your take going back to Cleveland. Ty Lue is out as the head coach of the Cavs.
Right.
And
right.
It kind of ties into to Hugh Jackson in a way, because if Hugh Jackson, who didn't really deserve to be back as the head coach anyway, they bring him back only to fire him in week 8. Ty Lue loses LeBron James. The city and the organization loses LeBron James. And 6 games into the season, you're firing your head coach.
Right.
Why not make a move in the offseason if, in fact, you're willing to part ways within the first 2 weeks of the regular season with a guy?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that kind of move, why not go out during the offseason when you can have your pick of coaches more or less, bring the guy in for summer league training camp. You know, that's what teams normally do. And I'm always amused by this. I mean, when Ty Lue had LeBron James, he went to 3 straight NBA finals and won one. And now he doesn't have LeBron James, and he was 0-6. That tells you a little bit about how good LeBron James is.
Sure.
I mean, how many games did they win the year after he left to go to Miami? Was it 19?
Somewhere in the teens.
Yeah, it was in the teens. I think it was 19 and 63. And so, yeah, I agree with you, Jonathan, that if you don't think Ty Lue can coach your team without LeBron James successfully, then go get the best guy you think can. During the off season and basically start over again, because that's what they're doing without LeBron. And again, this is more evidence just how good LeBron James is.
Yeah.
And I'm a little nervous for my friend Dennis Felton, who's the coach at Cleveland State. Because right now coaching in Cleveland is clearly not a good place to be.
And this is for a much broader discussion, but you know, maybe I'm being ignorant here, but how many head coaches in the NBA truly make a difference?
Can you count
on one hand?
Yeah,
Brad Stevens.
Steve Kerr certainly does. There's no doubt about that, that he's been able to harness that talent. I think Brad Stevens does in Philadelphia. He's obviously a terrific coach.
In Boston.
Thank you. I don't know why I said Philadelphia. I had Philadelphia on the brain there. I can't judge Brett Brown yet because he's had such bad players, and now he's trying to develop some good young players. So and there may be a few
Popovich.
Others. What?
Popovich, maybe?
Yeah, Pop, absolutely. Yeah, he's one of the great coaches of all time. And I think I've got to say this, he's not a kid anymore, but I'm blocking on his name, the guy in Miami.
Eric Spoelstra,
who has proven that he can be successful without LeBron James. And, you know, was brought in basically almost as a caretaker in case they got good and Pat Riley wanted to take the job back again and win another championship. And he's proven to be a very good basketball coach.
John Feinstein joins us every Monday to hit the big national headlines. John, thank you as always, and we will catch up next week.
I will look forward to it. Tell Paul I miss him.
We'll let him know. Thank you, John.
Talk to you guys.
Thanks, John.
Bye.